Frustrated with your golf game? Imagine playing with total confidence. Join me, LPGA Pro and golf mindset expert, Debbie O'Connell, for my Conquer Your Golf Mind Challenge. Bill cuts 6 strokes, and Lori is club champion. What's your goal? Click the link or text NEXT to 727-339-0106. Use code NEXT for $20 off. Your tee time for transformation is now. Will you take the shot?
Hey, next on the Tee Nation, thanks for coming back and tuning in to part two of this week's show featuring my conversations with 2003 PGA champion Sean McKeel and top 10 instructor Martin Chuck. I talked to Sean about his return to Oak Hill last year for the PGA Championship. It was the 20th anniversary of his victory there in the PGA, and he gets to go back and revisit a lot of that time. So we'll hear some of the stories of what it was like for him to be back on that property, including being right there at the plaque on the site of his famous 7-iron shot to inches of the cup to seal his win on the 72nd hole. We'll also talk about overcoming adversity during our rounds, which we all face, and what it was like for him to play in the group behind Arnold Palmer during Arnie's final Masters appearance, and then alongside Seve during his last Open Championship. So we'll hear all those stories from Sean. And then Martin Chuck will talk to us about a new set of wedges that he is promoting alongside of Performance Golf. He is the spokesperson for these wedges, and I'm telling you, they are absolutely outstanding. If they've got me excited about going out and hit bunker shots, you guys know these have got to be a special set of wedges. He'll talk to us about the technology that they have used to help simplify pitches and chip shots from inside of 60 yards, plus hitting shots from difficult lies, like if you've got a tight line of fairway, or if your ball ends up rolling into a divot, no problem for these wedges. I'm excited to have Martin back as part of the show. So sit back, folks, relax. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2under.com. 2Under, performance in your pants.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls. All so they can get you the perfect fit.
All right, now back with me is a guy who has been a very important part of this show since he first joined me back in May of 2014, and that is 2003 PGA champion Sean McKeel. Sean is by far one of the most underrated players that we've ever had out on the PGA Tour. As I've said many times, I don't think he gets nearly enough credit for what he's achieved over the course of his playing career. Not only did he win that 2003 PGA Championship, he very nearly backed it up in 2006 when he finished second to Tiger at Medina, which most people tend to forget. He would go on to defeat Tiger, oh, by the way, that year at the Match Play Championship. In the first round, he beat him 4-3. And over the course of Sean's career, he has 20 top 10 finishes, 57 top 25s. He is one of only 3 players to ever record a double eagle in the U.S. Open, which he did back in 2010 at Pebble Beach. He's one of my all-time favorite guests, and I'm very glad he is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Sean, how are you, my friend?
I really enjoyed your conversation there. I caught the last few minutes with Dr. Bob there, and it reminds me of something I was kind of talking with one of the kids, one of the team members from Butler this morning. You know, a lot of the kids, they all hit the ball so well, and they hit it so far. And a lot of them are just kind of searching for that one kind of missing link. And it seems to always kind of come down to the mental side of things. And it could be, you know, it could be confidence. It could be, you know, self-doubt, like you were talking about with Dr. Bob. You know, mindset was the thing that I got today. And I told this young man, well, we were just texting, we're going to talk tomorrow. But I told him, I said, you know, I told all the kids, you know, when you play, before you play your round, you know, you need to have a game plan. You know, you need to have a strategy. How are you playing? You know, what's the course? I mean, all the typical things you would think, the variables within the game, from wind to rain to firmness. I mean, all these sorts of things. But I think, you know, you also have to have a game plan, kind of a contingency plan for what happens when things don't go well. Because the moment you get out there, you know, things change. The conditions change. Maybe you're not playing as well as you were the day before. And so I think that really kind of took them by surprise, I think, when I said that. And a lot of it, too, may just be in the subconscious. But most of the young players that I'm around, they don't know how to right the ship. And they spend the rest of their day trying to figure out, you know, how to play golf versus just trying to put up a score. So, you know, it kind of, well, your conversation really resonated with me and some of the things that I try to help out, you know, with the student athletes at Butler.
So let's take that a step further, Sean, because to your point, we're all going to face adversity out there at some point during our round or during the course of a tournament. How do you overcome adversity? How do you right the ship when things are starting to come apart?
I mean, it all goes back to just kind of the fundamentals of the game. I mean, sometimes you just have to start over. Sometimes, you know, you need to work on your breathing. You always have to work on your breathing. You have to find, maybe you changed the style of play. Maybe you were hitting it so well and the course was set up for aggressive play. And well, maybe you have to abandon that and go to something more along the lines of a fairways and greens type of style of play. You know, maybe you just need to find one particular shot that you know you can hit. You can hit, whether it's a knockdown shot or tee the ball a little bit lower off the tee. I mean, there's a million things that you can do, but you just can't afford, you know, even at the college level, you know, they're playing for individual titles. They're playing for team titles. They're playing for the Big East, you know, conference championship. I mean, all these things, and every shot matters. And I think that's trying to convince them that it starts on the first hole. And, you know, you have to be in kind of in touch with yourself and with your game from the very first swing. You know, I tell them, I was like, there's no getting, you know, miss short putts. I mean, don't go up there and get frustrated and just backhand one. I mean, they all add up. So, you know, you just have to sometimes just go back to the beginning and figure out, okay, I need to put up a score. It doesn't matter how I do it. Doesn't matter what type of shot I have to play, but I just have to figure it out. Versus people get frustrated if they're hitting their driver to the right. They spend the rest of the day trying to figure out how not to hit it right versus trying to put up a score. So it's interesting, you know, kind of being on this side of the golf course, really, coaching a little bit, you know, and a lot of it, I think that I can offer them is some of the things that I didn't do well and some of the things that I've learned that maybe I wish I would have been better at. You know, in order to help them. And I just hope, even if some of it just kind of sinks in, I just want to give them an opportunity. And that's what I tell them about golf. You know, playing golf is about opportunities. You know, you find the fairway and, you know, you play your next shot and everything. So, kind of a boring way to play golf, but when you're not playing well, you're going to have to revert back to something that you know and a shot that you know how to play.
Let's talk about that, because team titles and every shot counts and all of that sort of thing. Golf is typically a singular solo game. But when you get to college, and we've seen it in high school as well, but it becomes a team game, and you can't just go in the tank, because the rest of your team, if you're one of the guys that's out there playing and the score does count that day, you got to try to play the best you can. And if you let your mind get away from you, and to your point, you're backhanding putts and all of that sort of thing, it's a different mindset when it's the rest of the team is counting on you to just try to play the best you can turn six into five, turn five into four,
yeah,
because all of our scores are going to count, and it really impacts the team.
It does. I mean, nobody wants to shoot 75, or nobody wants to shoot 78, but your teammate behind you might be shooting 79 or 80. And so, you know, you have to hang in there. And that is one of the first things that I told the team when I met with them about just how to play the game. I thought a little bit differently when I was in college. I kind of figured out that I was like, well, this really isn't a team sport. This is really the better I play as an individual, the better the team will do. And you know, I played well most of the time, so my scores kind of always counted. But when I got removed from that, I was like, wow, that's kind of a selfish thing to say. And so, yes, I've encouraged them just to make sure that even if you're not playing well, even if you're disappointed in your score, you just got to hang in there. It's like I go back. I said, because every shot counts. We've used that, you know, that's been used ad nauseum, you know. But I remember I don't remember what year it was. It could have been 1999 or 2000 or something. Billy Andre missed the tour championship by $5. So do you think that maybe he could have found a shot somewhere leading up to that would have made him more than $5? And so a lot of times, I'll see it on the first hole, first couple holes, that a player's just trying to get settled into the round and they do something, they get frustrated, you know, and then you get to the end and you lose the tournament by a shot, either as a team, an individual, and you don't really think about it. You don't think about the day one where you made a silly mistake on the very first hole. You know, you figure, well, I got plenty of time to make up for it. But you never do. You never do. I mean, bogeys happen, you know, and those types of things, but you can't let kind of careless mistakes affect your score, and that ultimately affects the team.
You mentioned being able to share some of your life lessons with some of the young players. What are some lessons that you learned over the years that you'd like to pass on to some of the players you're working with?
Well, I mean, you know, I enjoyed a little bit of success. I mean, the players really are in tune with me about how to hit a particular shot. You know, how do I play to a back pin? How do I play to a front pin? And some of the things that I tell them, you know, they never really thought about, you know, playing a certain shot a certain way. You know, again, it's more just kind of the mental side of things, because, you know, everybody hits the ball a long way now, and they all hit it pretty straight. So, you know, what's going to separate me from the next guy? And that's typically, you know, putting, thinking, patience, commitment, and commitment and dedication are two things that I really kind of preach to them. Because when you set up for a shot, when you line up and you approach the shot, whether it's a two shot or a second shot into a green, you know, you really have to be committed. You know, you have to, all the little things that you kind of take for granted, whether it's just the lie or it's the wind or those types of things. A lot of times they just get up, they get a yardage. And what's difficult, I think, for me is all the players have lasers. They all have, you know, those range finders. Well, you know, you're standing out there in the fairway and you shoot it from the middle and you say, oh, I got 150. Well, they don't look at their yardage book. They don't look at a yardage book. They don't know that it's, you know, 142 to carry the bunker and then eight on. They just see 150 and that's all they play. They don't. So sometimes there's not a lot of thought. And you know, look, as a tour player, sometimes, you know, we definitely overanalyze things, you know, but the style of play is different. And so I try to get them just to kind of slow down and think of some of these things, you know, using a yardage book, taking notes, charting your shots. And I show them my yardage book and they're floored by the stuff that I put in my book. You know, and in their defense, there's not a lot of time, because each of them has to carry a phone. One of them is responsible for scores in the front nine, and they're having to get their phones out after every single hole. Meanwhile, they got text messages popping up. So it's totally a different game. In that regard, but as far as playing the game and thinking about, you know, how to play, you know, it's all the same.
So what were some of the things that you would put in your yardage book that surprised the players that you showed?
Well, I mean, you know, I in my yardage book, I have, you know, what do I have to the front? What do I have the pin? What do I have the carry? What's the wind doing? Which direction is it coming from? When I get up to the green, you know, where did it carry? How far did it release? I mean, all these things, you know, my books are all filled. You know, I don't spend a lot of time in practice rounds. I think maybe now I don't. You know, I put little notes, like little X's, or I'll write the word no or something like that on where not to be. And usually when I do that, it's I put that down for any pin. I mean, there are just places that you can't play from for any of the pins that might be on the green. But they look at that and they just, like I said, they tee off and they get their yards, their range finder up, and they shoot it, and then they just go with that number. And I just try to get them to kind of slow down a little bit and take stock, because, you know, from one day to the next, you know, the wind changes and you want to know, hey, I hit a knockdown 6-iron from 160 yesterday into a 15-mile-an-hour wind, and today I only have an 8-mile-an-hour wind, so maybe I can hit 7. So just makes it easy on your rounds to go back and look at, instead of trying to remember, you know, what you did the day before. You've got it right in front of you.
Sean, I want to switch gears and kind of go back into your playing career. As we look ahead to the Masters next week, your win at the 2003 PGA got you into the 2004 Masters. What do you remember about your first Masters experience?
Well, I remember it very well, because I had lunch with him last month. Jack Nicklaus and I played a practice round in my very first Masters. He had reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to play, and we did, and had a fantastic time. I picked his brain a little bit, and he showed me a lot of things, a lot of places, especially in 86. We got around to number 17 when he, you know, Vern Lundquist, yes sir, you know, came about, and he goes, you know, Sean, I came back the next year and I putted this ball from the same exact spot and it broke a different direction. So, you know, whether that was through regrassing or who knows, but it was just kind of a little funny tidbit. But, you know, as far as competitively, I got to play behind Arnold Palmer in his last Masters. So it was me, Colin Montgomery, and Jay Haas. So I got to play behind Arnold the first day. And of course, it took close to 6 hours that day, because he got a standing ovation on every tee and every green, which was really pretty wonderful to see. It was the only year that I made the cut. I think I spent the next four times that I played the Masters trying to figure out where not to hit it. And, you know, back to your conversation with Dr. Bob, is I seem to focus more on where not to hit it than where I wanted to hit it. And that really affected the way that I played around there, because the course is unusual. There are places that you can be that you can't get up and down from. There are places on the greens that you can't two putt from. And I spent a lot of time, you know, trying to figure out where those places were, and to my detriment, you know, but it was a wonderful time. You know, I played 5 Masters, and, I'm taking my son next week. The last time he was there was he was a 4-year-old, and he caddied for me in the par 3. So he's anxious to go back, and as am I.
Speaking of being paired around a legend in their final appearance in a major, you were paired with Seve at his final open appearance in 2006 at Royal Liverpool. What was it like going around with him in his final open?
Yeah, I loved it. You know, he was pretty quiet. It was me and Ian Poulter and I were paired with him. And I just remember kind of just marveling at his incredible touch. Also, just the way he interacted with the fans. He just kind of had this look. I mean, he looked like he could win the tournament. And just the way that he approached, the way that he walked, the way that he carried himself. Head was always up. You know, he was always grinding. And it was. None of us made the cut. I don't know if Ian felt the same way I did. We were just kind of, you know, kind of watching him, you know, maneuver his way around the greens. I mean, and Seve used a 50, 60 degree wedge. he was hitting pitch shots and little chip shots around bunkers and over bunkers. And I think he and I just kind of got, you know, caught up in what he was doing and just kind of in awe of, you know, not only what he had done in the game, but just, you know, what he was trying to accomplish. You know, he's still trying to make the cut, still felt like he could win. His son was caddying for him. So there were a lot of little conversations. You know, he didn't speak a whole lot. He was pretty focused on what he was trying to do, but it's an experience that I'll never forget.
Last year was the 20th anniversary of your PGA Championship victory at Oak Hill. I know that win has ended up being a little bittersweet for you as time went on. What was it like for you being back at Oak Hill for another PGA?
I so just love that place. I mean, Oak Hill has hosted a lot of championships, and it's a membership. They are extremely proud of their history. And, you know, some courses aren't too keen on hosting these major championships. You know, it takes a lot of work, a lot of time away from the course that the members, you know, have to play other places and things like that. And so, but Oak Hill has always been different. They've always embraced their tournaments, and, you know, it's just different. I mean, I had done a lot of stuff with Golf Channel and ESPN, kind of, you know, recapturing 20 years of, you know, of my life and revisiting what happened in 2003. And so I spent a lot of energy, you know, with that. And it was pretty emotional because my son was with me. I took him up. Well, my whole family was with me, but I took him up there to play on Saturday. So he and I got a chance to play the golf course with two members. And, you know, I just had the best time. I mean, you know, obviously my time has come and gone, but to be able to kind of share that with him was pretty special. And, I was very disappointed with my scores. I actually didn't play as badly as my scores kind of indicated. Just the changes that Andrew Green had made to the course, it was extremely penal, you know, off the fairway. A lot of the kind of the grass-faced bunkers, I found a couple of them. And actually, you saw two players, I think Victor Hovland and was it Corey Connors, 2 days in a row on the same hole, they both buried it into the lip of the bunker on their second shot. And so it was very difficult. And then the greens had been, you know, kind of recontoured. They brought a lot of the edges back into play with deep greenside bunkers. I found a couple of those, and I think it was just really a matter of kind of getting done. But to kind of revisit, you know, that I really enjoyed being back there. I love being back in Rochester. It's a fantastic golf course. It's a fantastic club. Like I said, I've made a lot of new friends up there, but my golf was pretty disappointing.
There's a plaque on the ground where you hit one of the greatest shots in golf history. What was it like standing where you hit that magical 7-iron shot to a few inches on the last hole? What was it like looking down and seeing that plaque?
That's been there for a good while, and I've seen it a number of times. I remember that shot that I hit on 18, just like it was yesterday. I remember how I felt, the conversation that I had with my caddy, and sadly, Bob passed away a few months ago. You know, my caddy that was with me on the bag that week, and I spoke to him in February, and I was encouraging him to try to come up and spend some time with me and my family, because he and I hadn't been on property together since August 17th, 2003. But he didn't come, and then he unfortunately passed away in December. But so I thought about him. I let my son hit a shot from the plaque. You know, he had a couple of shots from the plaque. So I get it all the time. I'll see people in pro-ams like, "Hey, Sean, I hit a shot from your plaque the other day." That makes me feel good. It was definitely a great time in my life, you know, both professionally and personally. I just, like I said, when I saw it or when I do see it, it just takes me back to that day in August. you know, with my wife standing there. And that was the other story, is that in 2003 when I won, you know, my wife was 6 months pregnant with my son. And again, to have him come and play golf with me at Oak Hill was really pretty special.
Are we going to get to see you out on the Champions Tour this year?
I'm playing. I was at Bermuda Dunes last week. You know, that story that Dr. Bob told, I was at Bermuda Dunes doing a Monday qualifier. You know, I think most people don't realize, I mean, I'm not fully exempt on that tour. So I'm a member, I enter the tournaments, but every week I'm like 30th alternate. So I have to, you know, maybe get an exemption here or there and try to qualify for events. And that's getting tougher. It's getting tougher. I mean, I have no problems with trying to qualify. You know, they took away a spot, so there's only three spots. But you got to play well. I mean, that's the great thing about the game. I mean, the better you play, I mean, if you play well, you know, there's always going to be a place for you. And if you don't, you know, you're going to be sitting on the sidelines. So I practice every day. I'm trying to get ready. But I think what's difficult is not having the competition, because, you know, I can play every day at home and I can play well or I can putt well. But when they announce your name on the first tee and every shot matters, it's just a little bit different. So nothing replaces competition. And I haven't played a whole lot of competitive golf the last couple of years. I've probably only played, you know, maybe 13, 14 tournaments in 2 years. And that's just not a lot of golf. And it's hard to be competitive, because I put a lot of pressure on myself to play well in the limited opportunities that I get. So I need to change that mindset a little bit and try not to kind of, you know, go for broke, so to speak. And just try maybe let things happen a little bit more. But I am playing. I'm going to play the PGA at Valhalla. I'm actually going to play an event, a European event in Barbados in early May. Then I'll play the PGA, then the senior PGA, and hopefully get a couple of exemptions. But the only tournaments I'm exempt for on this side of the pond is the PGA, the senior PGA, and the senior Open Championship, which is at Carnoustie this year. Now, I am exempt on the European Senior Tour, so I'm probably going to play a little bit more. It's, you know, it's hard traveling over there. It's expensive to go. I mean, every week it's $5,000 or $6,000, you know, before you even hit a shot. And my wife's like, well, you know, you got to invest in yourself. And I'm like, well, yeah, I did that for a long time. And now I'm starting, as I get towards retirement, I start thinking about, you know, saving instead of spending. So, you know, but if you don't play, you're not, you know, you don't have a chance to win. And I love playing. I love competing. And so I'll probably play more in Europe this year if I don't get too many starts over here.
Sean, before I let you go, let our listeners know how they can stay up to date with all the great things you're doing and follow you, whether it's online or it's on social media.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on social. I'm on all apps. All Instagram, and you just type in my name, you can find me pretty easily. You know, always happy to have a conversation. You know, I meet new people on there all the time. So, anybody that wants to reach out certainly can.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for coming back and joining me again this week here on the show. It's always so much fun getting to have you as part of this show. You were a wonderful, almost regular, many years ago, and when we first started to get to know one another. And I'm a huge fan of not just your golf game, just a huge fan of the man that you are. So I thank you so much for sharing more tonight, and I hope we get the privilege of having you back on the show again soon.
Yeah, that'd be great, Chris. Yeah, it's always enjoyable to kind of catch up with you as well. So thanks for having me on.
You bet. Take care, Sean. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
That sounds good.
That's the great Sean McKeel, folks. At Sean McKeel PGA is how you can follow him on social media. And just like I just said a moment ago, he is just one of the great people that you get to meet in this game. And I'm thoroughly sincere when I say one of the most underrated players in the history of the PGA Tour. I mean, not only did he win that 2003 PGA Championship, like I said in his intro, he backed it up with the 2006 PGA, where he finished second to Tiger. So he almost won two PGAs, and then going out and defeating Tiger in the match play and 20 top 10 finishes. So he was in the mix a lot between 2003 until 2010, when he had some shoulder issues, came back strong a few years later, and then some more injuries. But I'm rooting hard for him out on the senior tour. Just like I say, a finer individual you will not find on this planet, and a guy that I really hope has some more success before he decides to walk away. Okay, joining me next is going to be one of the top 10 instructors in our game, and a guy I had so much fun with a few weeks back when he joined me that I wanted to get him back on the show as soon as I could, and that is Martin Chuck. Before I get to Martin, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speedbolt at squares.com. That's squairz.com. Looking for the ultimate Myrtle Beach golf experience? Well, it's only a click away. Check out the two-play special at two of America's most awarded public golf courses, Caledonia Golf and Fish Club and True Blue Golf Club. They are low country masterpieces featuring two iconic Mike Strantz designs. Play these two incredible courses for one great price. Visit CaledoniaGolfAndFishClub.com to learn more about the two-play special and book your tee time today. Again, that's CaledoniaGolfAndFishClub.com. All right, now back and next on the tee with me is Martin Chuck. Martin was such a wonderful guest a few weeks back that I asked him to come back on and join me again as quickly as I could get him back on, and he's gracious to do that. Let me remind you a little bit about his background. He has been named a top 100 teacher by Golf Magazine every year since 2017. Golf Digest ranked him number 7 this year. That's up from 26th a year ago. You can find him out at the Raven Golf Club in Phoenix, Arizona. He's from Toronto, Ontario, played his college golf at New Mexico State University from 1988 to 1991. And while he was there, he earned his degree in professional golf management. And then after college, he spent a few years playing on the Canadian Tour and then what was then the Nationwide Tour. He's been a club professional and director of golf at places like Indian Ridge Country Club, Arrow Creek Country Club, and Tetherow Golf Club. He now has his own teaching academy, Tour Striker Golf Academy. He is a wonderful guy and a fantastic instructor, and I can't be more honored that he is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Martin, thanks for coming back on the show.
To come on after Sean McKeel, it was a great listen, and it brought me back down memory lane because we're pretty much the same age, and to see, you know, him right out of school and, you know, have that kind of success. Well, it wasn't sudden, but it was, you know, he worked his tail off and became a very, very good, competent player. And I'm glad he's still enjoying chasing the ball around.
Absolutely.
You know, it's awesome. So how you been?
I'm good. I gotta tell you, since the last time we spoke, you've come out with a great new wedge set that I was so impressed with when I watched your promotional video. I went out and got one, got a whole set of those wedges myself. The one wedge is amazing. I gotta ask you, where did that inspiration come from to go out and design wedges that are for the rest of us instead of tour players?
Well, to be honest, I wish I could take claim for that. It was Chris McGinley. So Chris McGinley is now, he's had an awesome background in club design with Titleist. And he brought Bob Bokey into the fold at Titleist in the wedge department. Bob Bokey did the driver that I used to game back in the day, the 975, that a lot of people really enjoyed, one of Titleist's great drivers that they made. But he worked for Performance Golf, and Performance Golf made the one wedge. But they sent me a one wedge probably 6-7 months ago and said, hey, let us know what you think. And I've coached everybody, major winners to people that don't know what end to hold. And I have a blast coaching anybody and everybody. And tell you what, the shots around the green, you know, people, and Hank Haney said it best. It's like when you're around the green, get on the green, two putt and move on. And I know that sounds crazy, like people always think they can get up and down. Well, the reality is, if you just get it on the green, two putt and move on, you're doing fine. And then once you get a bit of confidence, now you start to look at things a little differently, where there's opportunity to maybe get it on close, one putt and move on. So when these wedges were presented to me, like I said, way back when, you know, I messed around with them. They asked me if I was interested in being a spokesman for them. And I said, for sure, you know, because I coach golfers that are just absolutely terrified around the green. So for them to get a club in their hand that's got a very forgiving soul, yet it has some relief in the heel, that's the big difference with a lot of the other, you know, game improvement wedges that help people get out of bunkers and so forth. These wedges, as you've seen, they look nice. They have a playability element to them that game improved wedges typically don't have. Yeah, you know, you can hit the one shot with all the game improvement wedges, get you up on a green, but these ones give you a little bit more creativity so that a golfer that maybe doesn't spend a ton of time practicing can be a little bit more reliable. And that's why, you know, I was happy to, you know, support them and do their video training for them and stuff. And, you know, I'm being told that they're doing well, like they're selling well and people are enjoying them. And that's fantastic.
Yeah. For most of us, when we get anywhere around the green and we get a wedge in our hands, we tend to decel the club face, the club head.
Right.
We decel at impact. And the next thing you know, we're either chunking it or we're thinning it over the green and that sort of thing. Talk about how these wedges prevent that.
Well, interesting thing. So back in the day, I grew up around George Knudsen in Canada. He was my mentor as a kid, wonderful coach. He had back weighted clubs. So the clubs were heavy golf clubs and had weights in the grip, and, you know, made the overall weight heavy. It made the club feel lighter, so the club had more sense of being quicker. Well, Chris McGinley took some neat club head design characteristics and then back weighted the shaft. So the overall weight of these golf clubs is heavier. So when you hold on to these, they help you use your body more rather than being handsy. And since most of the weight or more weight is in the handle rather than, well, they're just balanced differently. They're weighted in the handle. So it almost accelerates the club for you because the club head feels lighter. It's really not. It's just that the overall weight of the club is heavier. And more weight is in the grip. So it's a unique feeling. And I'll tell you what, I haven't had anybody at my camp, and I've had a couple of demos in my, you know, my bag of tricks with my Tour Striker and all my training products and this and that. And then if I see them with a wedge that they can't handle, or, you know, something that's from way back when that is, they really need to throw in the trash, I'll say, here, try this wedge. You know, and it's obviously for, I'd say, a good percentage of golfers. There's some golfers that can handle, you know, the great wedges made by, you know, Cleveland makes great wedges, or Titleist is an example, or, you know, Mizuno, Ping, etc. But if people aren't great with how they engage the ground and the ball, this wedge handles that scenario nicely and gets a result that is better than most. That's what I would tell you.
It's interesting you mentioned the word handsy, because they feel so sturdy when I grip the golf clubs. The weight in the grip feels better to me. I feel almost more confident just, you know, holding that wedge in my hand before I've ever stood over a golf ball, because it just, everything about it feels so sturdy. It instills a little more confidence in me. And I think that, you know, having both of those things are half the battle.
Well, you know, I like how you said that. You know, that's a good way to represent it. Like, they feel sturdy. I would say that you're not gonna win a long drive contest with these wedges. You know what I mean? Like, because the weight of the club head is lighter, you know, there's more weight in the handle. But, you know, for hitting cute shots around the green and being really, really effective from, I'd say, comfortably 100 yards and in, yeah, they're very, very nice for most golfers.
And when we find ourselves on tight lies, I mean, there are two situations that I know that I struggle that I think these wedges are going to help me out with. It's either on a tightly mowed fairway where it's a very tight lie, or in a greenside bunker. It seems like it takes a lot of the thinking out of the shots for me. You know, I don't need to worry about on a tight lie that I'm going to, you know, scull this thing all the way across the green and into God knows where. Or if I'm in a greenside bunker, I don't need to worry about how much do I need to open the face of this club. I need to open my stance. I need to open the face, you know, all that sort of stuff. It feels like to me, Martin, that these things take a lot of that kind of, you know, thought process out, where I can just stand over the ball, have my body square, aim and shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. Like, we joke about it. You know, we just say that, you know, you have one job, touch the ground. I know that's crazy, but a lot of people freak out and they don't touch the ground. Why? Because they're terrified they're going to stick the club in the ground. Well, the sole is forgiving. It's cambered a certain way. It's a little thicker. It's also relieved at the heel. So the nice news is, like, thump away and let the thing skip around and let the ball pop off the face that gets delivered to the ground, getting along the grass. You know, the leading edge gets under the ball pops up, you have success. And yet you still, you know, if you can just do the one thing we ask you to do is touch the ground in the right place. And then it comes with, I do an educational bit too that says, hey, here's a series of simple things to do, because some people can't, you'd be amazed, you know, but if they follow the simple guidelines of how to have a mild body rotation, just how to rotate just a tiny bit, and how a body behaves in the simple way to touch the ground sort of in the right place. And then you have a wedge that's as sturdy, like you say, and, you know, with a very, very reliable sole, the ball pops up, and that's when you start gaining confidence, because now you're like, hey, wait a minute, I know how the ball is going to react. And if I know how it's going to react, then I can predict the outcome. And now I step up to a shot, I draw upon a past experience, the ball pops off the face, and hopefully you get what you expect. And I'm seeing more and more people enjoy that.
One of the places that you show a ball ending up and you show great success with these wedges is if we happen to roll our golf ball, or our golf ball happens to roll into a divot. For most of us, we're shaking our heads like, now I'm sunk. How the heck am I going to get this ball out of here? And these wedges seem to do a lot better job of that.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, the guy who made them, Chris McGinley, lovely guy, massive amount of experience designing golf clubs for a variety of companies. And, you know, through time, you gain experience and you kind of go, well, if I was going to build a wedge that suits most folks, it isn't a pure game improvement. It's got all the features of a pure game improvement, but it's also got a couple little things that even like a 5 handicapper wants. You know what I mean? Like I could play them. Like, for example, I've played them. I've had it in my bag for a long, long time. And then, you know, to be candid, I'm still a pretty good player, so I can handle tour wedges. And I've got I use Cleveland wedges, and they're fantastic. But if somebody said, hey, you got to play the one wedge, I'd be like, perfect, I'll play it. I'd love it. It's great. You know, there's a couple more shots, because I'm skilled, that I can do with my Cleveland wedges that I can't do with my one wedge. But for those people that have any kind of Achilles heel, any kind of nerves, man, they're just beautiful.
And not only that, as I got one in my hands as we speak. It's got.
I'm glad you like them. That's fantastic.
Indeed, you got a full face, right? The grooves are full face, but there's also some other markings on the face of these wedges. Talk about those.
You know, so I wish I could tell you all. You know, I know there's a big list of features that Chris has got in there. He's got, like, within the rules of golf, the etching on the face to provide the maximum spin. You know what I mean? So it's like the face has, what people don't realize is the grooves are great, because that dissipates grass and moisture. It's like grooves on a tire. You know, so your tire has grooves because, you know, it rains some days. If it didn't ever rain, you wouldn't need grooves on a tire. You know, so if the rain, it gets kind of shoveled away in the grooves of a tire. Well, the grass and the water from the grass kind of gets, you know, shoved away from the space the grooves provide. But the actual metal between the grooves has an element of friction too that's very important. And so, just like a lot of very good wedges, you know, wedges are milled. Well, these wedges have an abrasive feature designed in to help you spin the ball, to help you get a good, you know, amount of stop on those shots that hit the green and you know, would normally roll over, we'll tend to put the brakes on. So, like I said, you know, Chris has put a lot of thought and effort into these, and the, you know, my great pals at Performance Golf asked me to you know, rep the club. I did it a long time ago. They finally launched it. You know, it's one of those things like, guys, when are you going to like let the world hit these wedges? And now I'm glad it's out there because I've seen some people just have more fun, and that's really all it's all about. I mean, I like to feel, I'm the fun administrator. You know, I want people to hit it better, have more fun. End of story. Whether that's a tour player or somebody who's like picking up the game for the first time, you know, have more fun, hit it more solid. That's the key. Pretty simple.
Martin, you also do a wonderful video series. You've got videos on so many things. Your teaching and the way that you put information and put the process together and convey it to us, to me, is better than anyone who's ever done it. Talk about some of the video series that you've got available that we can go out there on Performance Golf and check out.
So, you know, I'm an overnight sensation. Right. I've only been teaching since I was 16 years old. I'm 55 now. So I like to think that in my long time of teaching golf, damn near 40 years, that my communication style has become simple and direct. And like, I have fun with people. I always joke with people. I say, hey, I'm your coach. I'm not your club pro. I don't have to be nice to you. I'm going to be truthful with you. And so I was a club pro, and I had to be super nice to people. I had to tell them, you know, figure out a way to be super nice 5 times a day every time I saw them. And that was fine. I enjoyed my job, and I was good at doing that. And as a teaching pro, I'm still nice to you, but I'm like realistic. Hey, your grip sucks. This is why it sucks. You can't control the face. You're going to, the reaction from that is a chain reaction that's going to produce a bunch of things that don't work. So it's like, or are they like a broken clock worked, you know, correctly twice a day? So, you know, I think the videos that I've done, you know, and Performance Golf has, oh man, if you go there, you'll see my face on their website and you can click on it. And I'm like honored. I'm beside Nick Faldo. And it's like, there I am beside a guy who's won 6 majors. Crazy. But I've had good luck in the coaching world because I think I'm relatable to people. And, you know, I hold people accountable. You know, I'm nice to them, but I'm also, hey, here's a simple task. Do this simple task and you will have success. Don't try to, you know, shortcut things. Do this simply. Boom. Good success. Now, if you want to build on that, fine. Take on a bit more challenge. Take on some other things that can lead to potentially lower scores. But just want to go A to B and have fun playing golf. You know, people call it fundamentals. Yeah. Let's do things sort of within a reasonable parameter that aren't outliers, and you'll have success hitting golf balls kind of where you want them to go. And that's fun for most people.
So let's take that a step further, because I have lots of your peers on this show. And one of the things that so many people talk about, and I find hilarious, is that you get students who think they know better than you. No, that's not how you do it. You know, how do you handle the guy who comes in to take a lesson from you or is a part of a group session who also thinks he knows how to do it better than you do?
Well, you know, I would say strong personalities. I'll put it to you that way. You know, and so one, I do a demonstration when I start my camps, and I can still hit it. So, you know, very rarely can a student, I mean, unless they're a professional that still play, very rarely can a student step up and hit a golf ball better than I can. And now it happens, but it's not very often. And so right away, they're like, okay, the guy can walk the walk and talk the talk. So it's not like I can't demonstrate. So I really think that, you know, there's a respect in demonstrating. And so the person, they've come to see me for a reason. I'll tell you a funny story, and you got to forgive me. I got to go in a couple of minutes. But funny story. I get students that come to see me, and they say to me, you know, Martin, I've been with Hank Haney. I've been with, you know, and they'll list all like David Ledbetter and Butch Harmon. And these are, and they're not kidding. Like, they've spent, and I had a great gentleman today that, you know, had all these experiences. And then they say to me, you're my only hope. And then I say to them, So I say to them, wow, okay, that means you're not going to listen to me either. And so the person's like set back a little bit, right? And I'll say, well, listen, you spent some time with some amazing guys and massive experience. Now, here's what's going to happen. You're going to fight me. You don't want to fight me, but you're going to fight me. You're going to feel mildly uncomfortable. And frankly, that's okay. Can you disassociate the outcome for the betterment of the process just for a little while? And people have such a hard time with that. You can't imagine, Chris. Even when I say, hey, let's set a watch, let's set the clock, and we can just say, you know, call out to your phone, hey, set a timer for 15 minutes. You know, timer set 15 minutes starting now. Because if you can literally plan the suffering, and I'm not saying like suffer, but if you can plan an actual technical challenge for 15 minutes, like for example, one of my products is Smart Ball. Can you put it between your elbows and hit pitch shots without dropping it? You know, with an aim stick at a target and, you know, trying to hold your finish. And yeah, you might suck at it, but that's okay. Suck at it for 15 minutes. And guess what? The next time you do it, I bet you suck less. But people, I'm telling you, they want a miracle. And the amazing thing is, like, I've coached so much, sometimes I can, like, give people miracles, but I'm amazed, actually. But if they can just simply follow a plan for just a little bit without darting mentally every which way, man, they can be pretty good at golf. They really can. But most people have the attention span of a gnat. And so as a coach, I'm a pain in the ass. I snap them, hey. You stay with me here. What's the plan? Okay, let's walk in a certain way. Let's put good hands on the club. Let's aim the face, take a look. Set the feet, take a look. Wiggle, wiggle, go. So I try to get them into a cadence and a rhythm and a flow. And once you get them into a cadence and a rhythm and a flow, all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay, I see. I don't have to think of 48,000 things. No, you don't. There's no time to anyway. So you flow them into this darn thing with some basic stuff. They have a bit of rhythm, and you know, and some people are at all levels of rhythm, but most people can do it, and it's a damn blessing that I get to coach them. So I'm honored.
That's awesome, Martin. Before I let you go, let our folks know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing? See your videos out on the Tour Striker YouTube channel, and follow you online and on social media.
Yeah, just so I'm all over the place. Just Martin Chuck PGA at Instagram, YouTube. You know, Tour Striker, tourstriker.com website, you know, and then Performance Golf, you know, my partners in a lot of my video programs are great dudes. They're golf nerds themselves. They're very good golfers and they love it. So, you know, if you type my name in, you're going to get a lot of information, and I'd love to be a part of helping you develop your game. So Chris, thanks for having me on, pal. I appreciate you a lot.
Absolutely. Martin, you're awesome. Take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
All the best. Take care, Chris. Bye-bye.
See ya. That is the great Martin Chuck, folks. Again, Martin Chuck PGA is where you can find him on social media, Performance Golf. You go out there and you'll see tons of videos if you go on performancegolf.com. And also take a look at Tour Striker on YouTube. So many fantastic videos available for you right there. Martin has done so many great things. These wedges are awesome. And then beyond that, he's done so many great videos for all of us, teaching lessons and other tools to help us swing better and get into that rhythm that he just mentioned. So I love Martin. He's been fantastic to me this year. And I hope I have the privilege of catching up with him again very, very soon. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks again to Charlie Meacham, Dr. Bob Winters, Sean McKeel, and Martin Chuck for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are Tom Patry's finally going to be back. Seems like forever since TP has been a part of the show. It'll be good to have him back with me. I'll also be joined by 21-time winner between the PGA Tour and the Champions Tour. John Cook will be here. Cookie's always fantastic. As is 1989 Open champion Mark Calcavecchia. Very excited to have both Cookie and Mark as part of the show. And then my Goomba, top instructor Rob Strano, will round out next week's show. So it doesn't get better than that, folks. Really excited about next week's show. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. You can find this show available as a podcast just about anywhere you get your podcast content. In particular, we're on the Pittsburgh Tribune review site. Just go to triblive.com and click on sports, and you're going to find this week's show on the homepage of the sports section. You can also click on Sports and then Podcast and listen to any of this season's shows. You can also find us on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audio Boom, and Player.fm. And as always, my sincere thanks to the folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But as always, my sincere thanks go out to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate you all so very much. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.